I'm Annie Green.
Good evening, everybody. Hello, welcome to I think this is the 8th we're making a researcher. Today we have a researcher named Xingyuan Xu, and what's your English name, by the way?
Ella.
Right, Ella from the Education Department. For the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about the research that she's been doing for the past four years.
Yes.
And sadly enough. And what implications she hopes to achieve. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
Okay, hello there. My name is Xingyuan, but you can call me Ella. I'm a PhD student in educational psychology area, and it's my fourth year, so I'm just writing up at the moment. My research mainly about teachers' emotion under cross-cultural context. So,
right.
Yeah, I compare Chinese teachers who work in UK universities,
right,
with local British teachers or instructors, their emotional experience to students' classroom behaviors.
Right. So you work with emotions. That's quite specific. Why do you choose to study emotions? Or is there anything related to your, I don't know, personal interest or teaching working experience?
Oh, very good question. There's three main reasons for me to choose this topic. And personal reasons. We are humans, so we have emotions every day. you can see the feeling every day actually influence a lot of your behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And as a teacher, actually teaching is quite an emotion demanding career.
Yes, sure.
You have to somehow engage and interact with students in the classroom and pay some emotional labors in this job. And so, of course, you can get the emotion exhaustion.
Oh, right.
And
okay,
if you've been exhausted emotionally for a long time, it can burn you out. And that actually influences the teaching profession severely these days. And another thing is because actually teachers' emotion like mutually benefit with students' emotion.
Oh, right. Okay.
Students' learning outcomes.
Okay.
Like if you are a very optimistic teacher in the classroom,
yeah, sure,
or you feeling great that day, and it's just on your face.
Oh,
definitely. Yeah, you will smile, you will be kind to the students, and students definitely can sense it. And,
sure.
Yeah, they will learn in a more vivid and enjoyable environment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we both grew up in Chinese education system, and most of my high school teachers, they were really miserable. I don't think they are listening to this radio show.
Great.
They were so miserable, and I remember my math teacher, he was so miserable, and I hated math. Probably something to do, I don't know, with their emotion and my emotion, and that's why I hated math. So, okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of connections between this.
Definitely. Right, okay, that's very interesting. And did you do a... So before you came to do a PhD, what did you do back then?
Was a teacher.
Oh, yes. Right, great.
I was trained to be a teacher, to be an English teacher specifically. And I actually worked like about 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I had the experience working in junior high school,
right,
and I work in some private, language training institution, and in Beijing or in some other cities. So yeah, as a teacher, I do feel like my emotions influence my teaching methods and my engagement with the students. And that's very important part of teaching.
We hear this quite a lot on the show, like the starting point of why a PhD does his or her PhD research is it's usually from the personal experience and how you are actually interested in one thing or the other. So I'm not in your field, so I don't really know a lot about your field. Is education psychology or this... Is this the field of education, like emotion teaching, a big thing, or is it quite a niche market?
I should say first of all, it's some of my supervisor's area.
Right, yes, here we go. Who's the supervisor, by the way?
Professor Robert Klassen.
Oh, right, okay. He sounds great.
Oh, yeah, he's so fantastic.
Ah, nice.
And yes, thanks to him, I got this inspiration. And because firstly, my... my proposal wasn't about teachers' emotions,
oh, right,
it was
okay.
something else. And he encouraged me to look at the teacher's part. And also, thanks to some friends around me, actually Stephen Gao.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he was in
here. He was on the show last yes, week. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So. And he had teaching experience in China.
Yep.
And we talked once, and he says some you know hilarious moments for his teaching experience
oh,
back
right.
in China. And it's kind of a culture shock, and you know he has some very interesting stories. So yeah, that gives me a new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think, okay, as a British teacher working in a new country, you may have this kind of like fish out water feelings.
Definitely.
What if like Chinese teacher come to here and they working in a British higher education context? Will they seem the same thing, or will they have some another story?
All right.
So yeah, that's how I designed this research, like based in the cross cultural context.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I really would like to say, well, as a teacher who working abroad, will you feel the same way as local teachers, or will you feel differently?
Right. Yeah. So you said you're looking at higher education institutions.
Yeah.
Right. So you are looking at a quite high level of lecturers, basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
right. Kind of,
yeah.
How? So it's a qualitative method. Data.
Actually, it's
mixed methods, right?
Of course.
Yes, going, yes, yes.
Yeah, nowadays.
I know.
So, but yeah, my main measurement is a questionnaire.
Right.
So, firstly, I send out this online questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most interesting part of this questionnaire is I use video scenarios.
Right. Okay.
So I ask teachers to watch clips, the film, the short film clips, and they're about students' misbehavior in the classroom.
Right. Okay.
Like eating or playing on the phone.
Oh, right.
Or joking with each other.
Okay.
And so then I ask you to watch this if you're the teacher. And and you have to rate several emotions.
Right.
So like there are six emotions under each video.
Okay.
Like anger, sadness. And
oh, gosh.
From zero to severe. Like,
oh, okay.
That's the emotion. So, yeah. And I invite 99...
But that's quite a lot, actually.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's quite a lot for educational research. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit tough for recruiting participants.
Oh gosh, yeah.
But yeah, I make a lot of effort in that, and so there are 52 in British group and 47 in Chinese
control.
Group.
Yeah, yeah, right. Go ahead. For the British group, are they just English lecturers who
work
grew up here
in the university?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the, I think you're writing up now, so it's what are the actual data? What are they, what do
the
they
most
tell
interesting
you?
Part.
Exactly, yes, an abstract, if you may.
So from the questionnaire study, we found, me and the supervisor,
yep.
we found that there are two particular emotions, actually, the Chinese teacher reported feeling much intense.
All right.
Higher intensity than the British teachers. So these two emotions are anxiety
right.
and shame.
Oh gosh. Shame,
yes.
I know, shame.
That's
so weird. I know.
let me explain.
Okay, go ahead then.
And so, like, if you say the students eating or sleeping in your class,
yep.
like, will you feel shame from zero to severe? So, according to this scale, and the Chinese teacher reported statistically significantly higher.
Right.
And as the same thing happened to anxiety. So we are all interested why they feel that way.
Yeah, exactly.
So later I designed an interview, interview study. And so I interviewed like 13 participants.
Right.
Seven are Chinese and six are British.
Okay.
And so they gave me many interesting and sometimes a very reasonable answers
right.
To support the quantitative data.
Okay.
So let's start from shame.
Right.
So from Europe, if you're a Chinese teacher, yeah. I just ask, okay, could you tell me what do you think about the results? Give me your explanation about this funding. I try not to do the cultural stereotype thing.
No, yeah, like, definitely.
Oh, you are a Chinese teacher, please tell me your Chinese view.
Yeah, it's a bit, that's not very unethical. Not very nice.
It's a little bit silly. So I just ask, okay, here's my funding. Here is what happens, and just give me your reasons from your perspective. Okay. So yeah, the Chinese teacher said, oh, because I assume that from my personal experience, when I see the students here, like if they are playing on the phone, or if they are just do some small talk, I feel, oh, maybe something wrong with me.
Because
maybe my lecture is boring. I did some very poor classroom activity. That's why they're not interested. So they feel shame.
It must
be my fault. And interestingly, I interviewed many, six British lecturers, and many of them mentioned, most of them mentioned, they are adults. Here is university. And the students, they're adults. They should be responsible for their behavior.
Right.
Well, in my class, you can listen, or you can choose to play the phone, or you can choose to sleep. It's your choice. Right. It's nothing to do with me.
Okay.
And if you failed the session, if you failed module, it's your fault. I should feel shame. You should feel shame.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like for the Chinese lecturers working in UK universities, they sound more personal. They're taking
exactly
lots of the things quite personally.
And we from my view, we call it accountability.
Oh, right.
Like who to blame.
Okay.
And you can take this fault, you can take these things as your personal
definitely
error, your fault, or you can blame to others. And that makes a lot of differences in emotion generating process.
Accountability and that's shame explained, and you said
anxiety.
Actually, I was talking to quite a few of the master's students I was teaching this morning, and a lot of the students, they are doing their research, their master's project on anxiety. It's so popular now, like everybody's looking at anxiety. So what exactly is anxiety in your study?
It's like, there are many definitions emotions. But from my participants' view, it's a lot about uncertainty.
Oh, right.
It's like, as I said, the international teacher could be fish out of order.
Yes.
And when they say this behavior, they are quite not sure if it's wide acceptable in this context. Maybe in British education, it's just a traditional saying, like you can do the small talk. Uh-huh. You are very encouraged to do that. You know, but many Chinese teachers said back in Chinese tradition, teaching education tradition, the teacher be the dominant figure in the classroom.
Yeah.
And the students mainly just listening and making notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when the Chinese teacher come here, teaching in this classroom, so they kind of, lost the control.
Yeah,
they
sure.
don't really know, in this situation, I should let them stop, or I should encourage them, continue their small talk. What should I do? I go anxious.
Oh, right.
That's
what I'm saying. So your participants or these interviewed, the interviewees, they are, I would assume, experienced lecturers in higher education institutions?
Oh, I wouldn't say very experienced. Their average teaching years in UK, about 2 or 3 years.
Oh, right. So it's still quite adjusting. The buffing? Kind of stage. If you get to 7 or 8 years, probably if you ask them again in 8 years, probably they'll tell you a very different story.
I think there's a lecturer, she got 8 years teaching experience.
Really?
Her age is about 40-ish.
She still feels that way.
She's still, it's just she tried to give some reasons for quantitative findings. Uh-huh. So she guessed, and also based on her personal experience. Uh-huh. So there are a lot of like explanation for my mm-hmm. data. You can say maybe it's just because their lack of teaching experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And but some of them proposed one reason. It's not really about teaching experience.
Right.
It's about their language proficiency.
That comes up all the time, mm-hmm, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Whenever anxiety is kind of involved, that always comes up.
Yeah. As a second language speaker of English, and then you have to teach in university in the UK, definitely, there are a lot of pressures. But most of them dealing with these pressures very well. But no matter to higher or lower extent, there are pressures there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And some teachers saying, I'm usually feeling fine, but I feel very anxious if students ask me some questions like out of the textbook.
Or
I didn't expect that question, and I have to give the response immediately. And somehow my language doesn't help at this stage.
All right.
They feel quite awkward. Oh, that's another thing. Like they feel shame.
Yeah.
And that's another reason they feel shame. And if they make some slow response, or if they didn't use a very perfect sentence
to answer
students. And so that caused anxious.
That's very different. Like because my supervisor is she's not English, but she works here. She's more towards the English stereotype of the lecturers, and a lot of the times you would notice they don't really know the answer to our questions anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether she feels shame.
Don't you?
I know.
Worried about she listened to this?
No, I don't think so. Well, she doesn't know who I am, so never mind. Okay. I introduced you. I didn't introduce myself. So anyway, it will be interesting to see what exactly is going on behind their thoughts, I'd imagine. And is this like of a... You know, in studies, you have explanatory or exploratory. Is yours more towards the unknown?
I think it's in between.
It's in between, right.
Let's say the first part of the questionnaire is exploratory.
Right, okay.
Like my main risk question is trying to answer if there are differences on teachers' emotional experience between Chinese group and British group.
Yes.
Because, before me, so far, I didn't find anybody done this kind of research in the education domain. So my main question is to answer my main interest is to find if there are differences,
right? Okay.
And then what's the difference are,
or right, okay,
what,
yes,
or what kind of differences they have,
yes,
and to what extent they have this differences. So that's kind of exploratory.
Yeah.
And my interview study is kind of explanatory.
Oh, right. Okay.
Since I've already found these differences, then I'm also interested in what factors influence this.
So it's kind of self-exploring and self-explaining in a way. Okay.
Yes.
That's very interesting. So the whole thing is quite new. It's really new in the field in education, basically.
Yeah, because I combined education and psychology and the culture effects. Yeah,
right.
So three things. The triangle, yeah.
Oh gosh, yes.
Most the thing.
I know. It's the new hits. The new hits, the new theme of upcoming research in the field.
Yeah.
So we asked this in for all the guests as well, and which part of the PhD study did you find the most, or do you still find the most challenging? Which part is the part that you think, okay, if I have to do this again, I really need to rethink about this?
If I say all the parts, would it be too discouraging?
No, everybody says that. Everybody would just say, oh, it's horrible, don't do it. But yeah.
To be fair, I think, it depends on different person. Well,
yeah, sure.
Like me, and I would find the literature review searching and writing up mm-hmm. would be the weakness of mine.
Right.
But some students I know, like, they wouldn't, they really don't care about the literature research. They care, but it's not trouble for them or writing the things. They would be more worried about the data collection methodology part.
Yeah.
But for me, I think I can take the anxiety in contacting people.
Uh-huh.
Like sometimes you have to be like a sick face.
Oh yeah, you need to pester them all the time. It's like finding participants as well.
Yeah,
oh, God.
You just have to be strong inside smiling outside and begging them all the time.
I know. I know. Please do this.
Yeah, and most of them say no. Actually,
do they? Yeah, really.
Yeah. My research participants come across four nations in UK: Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland.
England.
Okay. So I never knew these people. I just sending out emails, thousands and thousands of emails.
Oh, Jesus.
And most of them didn't reply, and some of them replied politely, said, I'm so sorry, I can't take this. And only very, very few, finally, 99% joined this.
Good for them.
Yeah, thank you.
Good for them. We really like you.
Yes, you're the best in my life.
I know. I'm going to invite you to my wedding. I'm going to invite you to my graduation ceremony, and you're going to be best friends forever.
Yeah, you made my PhD.
I know. I'll be here because of you. So you find the literature review. Which part did you find, or do you find the most rewarding? Apart from the whole experience, it's quite rewarding, but any specific moments?
Rewarding moments, like... you really like keep calm and carry on. Why I find difficulty in literature searching, because I have no background in psychology.
Oh, did you not?
At all. Like I studied English literature for BA,
right,
and TESOL for MA.
Yeah, somehow don't know.
So yeah. So somehow I found myself interested in psychology. So I'm very slow in reading, and doesn't matter the learning and reproduce the thoughts from mm-hmm. psychology. So yeah, it takes a lot of effort from me and the time. So that's one reason. So if your students also start a new area, or you intend to start your PhD in a newish area,
oh gosh, yeah.
So you have to prepare yourself for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably you can take several months before you start your PhD, you can already start your literature review.
Definitely.
And talk this to your future supervisor.
Definitely.
Contact them as early as possible. Yeah. And get this reading list.
Oh gosh, yeah. Especially if I'm in language assessment, and luckily it's quite a new field, so I don't have like 3,000 books to read, but I imagine you do for psychology. It goes back so many years ago, and you have to kind of start from the beginning and know the fundamental theories and everything.
Yeah, you can't imagine just a definition for emotion. It takes me months, to define that.
And honestly, you need to define that at the beginning of your thesis. You can't just leave it there.
Exactly.
I found the word because I work with language proficiency, and I started looking because I'm revising my literature outline, and I'm planning to write one. And the debate over what constitutes proficiency and what constitutes proficiency in academic setting, that goes back, I don't know, like 200 years. I'm like, oh my God, is that really necessary? But yeah, very good advice if any of you listening wants to start a PhD in a new field. Yeah. Any other, I don't know, how do you feel about doing a PhD in York? Do you like the whole atmosphere? Do you enjoy it?
I think it's the best choice I've made.
Oh right,
yeah,
really?
Okay. Yeah, and not only the university, but also the city, the whole environment. I think it's very supportive for students.
Yes.
And I don't have experience of starting in another university, so I dare not to say they are bad or whatever. But just talking about York, I think the library and the librarians, they are very professional.
Tony Wilson.
Oh yeah.
I think that's our what's
department.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Librarian.
Yes, everybody knows him, the celebrity.
Celebrity.
I know, the celebrity. Tony, if you're listening, we really like you. I know.
Yeah, and if I request any books, and like several last month or 2 months ago, I request a book from library, and they just reply me 1 week later, only one week, and they said we get a drop down for you. We can buy this book for you.
That's very nice.
That's fantastic news. And
it's very expensive books. Books these days are so expensive. These days, I can't afford books.
Exactly. So thanks to this librarian. And another thing is, but still, it depends on person. But I think I'm very lucky because I got a fantastic and very supportive supervisor.
Yeah.
Rob Klassen. I don't know. Rob,
if anybody who's interested, please come and find Rob.
Yeah.
He's the head of research now, isn't he?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, he's the head of research.
Director, yeah, of research. He's amazing. Because as I said, I'm very new in psychology area, and he got a lot of patients on me and gave me a very great direction on me. Mm-hmm. And because I know I'm a very difficult students to deal with. I have serious problems in procrastination. Yeah.
Do you?
I do apologize here.
If you're Rob is listening, sorry.
Oh, my procrastination just kills me. Otherwise, I can finish my PhD in 3 years. I won't stay here.
I know. You won't be here.
Yeah, I won't be here. But Rob told me I should make friends with myself.
Yeah.
It's like you have to deal with what you've got.
Yes.
If it doesn't help if you're just punishing yourself.
Oh, no.
About this and being guilty always, you wouldn't move on.
No.
So then I try to learn, accept myself.
Yeah.
If I do procrastinating and I just, okay, I will go out. I will take some exercise.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Watch a movie, and I wouldn't blame myself. Like, think, oh, I'm such a bad, I'm a loser. I'm used to this loser. I used to think that bad.
Really?
I almost got depression.
Shame. There you go.
Shame.
That's the element we're finding here. Right.
Yeah, I think maybe because my supervisor is a chartered psychologist in the UK,
right.
So he knows the best how to deal with students like that. I overcome a lot of personal obstacles in the PhD journey. And I think if only speaking the academic part of PhD, I really enjoy it.
I think it's
fantastic things to do, and I'm so proud of myself to do this. And my advice is, don't let your personal weakness
get you down.
Yeah, get you down, get over you, or something like that. You have to accept yourself.
Very good. That's very deep, actually. That's much deeper than I thought. We always ask this for the guests. Are you planning a career of academia, do you think?
I'm hanging there.
Are you? You're right.
I haven't made the final decision, I cast my CV to some universities.
Yes, right.
And I wouldn't give up this journey.
Definitely.
I was wondering, maybe there are some other positions outside of academic, and I would be happy to do. Because, as I said, I'm not really strong in writing.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Rob said, if you don't really enjoy writing, you will find it very difficult to be an academic.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't know, 75 of the... 75 parts of our time is reading or writing, basically.
That's what worries me. I can't imagine myself spend the rest of my life just sitting in front of
the writing anxiety and writing shame.
Yeah.
I know.
No way. So that's why I had a second thought.
Yeah.
I may, get out of this for a while. I wouldn't say I've never come back to do the academic, but maybe I would like to try some other areas and see how it goes.
Yes.
And
you can always come back to the academia, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah,
it's
hopefully.
Always here, yeah, exactly. And I don't know, probably in 20 years' time, we don't need to write anything anymore. We just present.
Oh, that's my favorite part.
I don't know. I just do radio shows and talk about research and everybody will listen to it, which is fantastic. We have webinar now, don't we? The seminar, but it's conducted online, so...
Yes, I think our departments, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the future. If that's the future, that would be fantastic.
I don't know if you can publish webinar one day.
Probably you can. You never know. With Facebook and social media going like this, probably we'll write a thesis on, I don't know, on Twitter someday.
Yeah,
well, I know. Really 140 words. That's nice.
That's really nice.
I know. And right. So if anybody who will be interested in your research and who want to find you, how may they contact you?
They can contact me with my email account. I should say it now.
Yeah, you can.
Oh,
you
so
can.
It's xx553
yep.
at york.ac.uk.
Yeah. Yeah. And can they search for your name and it will come up on the, I think it comes up on the university website, and you are one of the postgraduate who teach.
Yes.
So it's on that one as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you
for coming to the show, and best of luck with your, you're going to America very soon.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
good luck with America, and enjoy your conference there. And if your publication comes out, I think if anybody will be interested, they will find your publication somewhere and read it somehow. Right, thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for listening. This is this week's Making a Researcher. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Shine a light to light the way. Brothers and sisters.